Chapter 6 Goliath pulled on the reins as he chomped his bit anxiously, so I gave him some slack and let him stretch out. The poor stallion hadn't been given the attention he deserved lately, but I'd been a busy god. Mahini rode her trustworthy mule, Warrior, but Zenda had taken one of our mares, Star. Jaxtum dwarfed his borrowed mount with his bulk, and his legs nearly reached the ground. We also had two pack beasts, a donkey and a mule, to carry the extra camping gear we would need to travel in the colder season, and we'd also brought dry fuel to make fires, just in case. Our supplies would dwindle rapidly, but we'd be able to restock in Windvale, my northernmost holding, before we carried on to Argonold Hold. I was excited at the idea of seeing my friend Ako Gray again, and the cat shifter from the Hermetic tribe was sure to be pleased to have us visit. His letters to me had been requesting just such a thing for months. We'd made sure to bring enough dragonhide, scales, and bones to make a full set of armor, but I'd also decided to bring the dragon egg with me, just in case I could hatch it and kill two birds with one fire.
"What do you suppose the northern reaches are like?"
Jaxtum asked after we'd ridden in silence for a while.
"Cold, just like everywhere else is right now. Nanao remains temperate year-round. This is the first time I've ever seen snow with my own eyes. How did you learn about it, then?"
Mahini asked in a curious tone.
"From books, of course. Back home in the Saboreal Isles, I was free to roam the library whenever I wanted to. It was my favorite place, and I buried myself in texts for most of my childhood. I saw pictures and descriptions long before I knew it was even a real thing."
"Isn't it funny how things don't seem to be real until you see them with your own eyes? It was like that with the dragon. But anyone who saw Smeagol are now firm believers in anything dragon."
"You can't blame people for thinking them naught but tales. My grandparents spoke of them as though they were myths. A part of me knew there were wonders beyond our shores,"
Zenda said, and she shot me an adoring glance.
"I had no idea just how wonderful my findings would be, though."
"Well, it's wonderful to have you with us," I countered with a wink.
"Aye, someone smart to keep Bash in line," Jax growled,
and we all laughed. We crossed a good deal of distance that first day, and we managed to find a suitable camping spot before the sun set. Memories of being hunted by a pack of werewolves flashed through my mind, and I made sure to triple-check our perimeter before heading to bed. I made a new save point once we hit the road again the next morning, just in case anything unpredictable happened during our travels that day. And then we continued on our journey. Zenda and Mahini discussed the pros and cons of various weapons, and the historian surprised the warrior woman with her vast repertoire of knowledge on the art of war. Jax kept quiet a lot more than I expected him to, but he muttered something about Toria's peach pie when I asked if he was okay. I wasn't sure if it was a euphemism or not, so I just let him be. Goliath settled down after the first day, but he had a protective attitude toward the rest of his small herd, and he would come to a complete halt if the pack animals began to slow. We ate trail mix and jerky on horseback to avoid having to make too many stops, but we paused to let the horses drink whenever we encountered a stream that wasn't frozen solid. The days passed uneventfully in much the same way. I made a new save point each morning, but nothing out of the ordinary happened. The snow fell off and on, and the sun glared in all directions when it hit the white landscape. I wished more than once for a pair of sunglasses, and I was determined to figure out a way to make a medieval equivalent before we reached the northern reaches. We arrived in Windvale late in the evening, and the horses picked up their pace when they smelled the comforts of the stable ahead. Once they were situated, we made our way to the inn, but the small establishment was more like a bed and breakfast than a hotel. Jax got his own room, but Zenda and Mahini shared with me, and the three of us snuggled into the thick blankets as the snow began to pick up outside the window pane. Windvale was one of my holdings, so I planned to spend the rest of the next day checking in with the mayor and business owners to make sure everyone had everything they needed to survive the harsh winter. The small mountain village was more accustomed to cold weather, though, and they were likely already prepared to face the months of cold weather ahead. Adorno, the mayor, looked a little younger than I remembered him being, and I wondered if stress had played a role in his overactive aging. The tall, lean-figured man's hair was combed and clean, and his jacket was freshly pressed. He cast a striking figure against the snowy mountain backdrop as he stood in the center of the street, and I quickly crossed the distance to him. "Hey, Adorno! How's the weather?" I asked with a wide smile.
"Greetings, great fun,"
Adorno said as he tucked his shoulder-length, dirty blonde hair behind his ears.
"What brings you to sunny Windfair?"
"I'm on a hunt for some sunshine, but it doesn't look like any's been here lately."
"Well, no. Try again in the wet season."
"How's everything going?"
"Better than ever. The timber market is thriving, trade routes are busy, and there's rarely empty rooms available in the inn. You've done right by Windville, great one, and we will forever be grateful."
"I didn't do anything you wouldn't do if you could," I said with a dismissive wave of my hand. "I'm just your average world-changing god, no big deal." I talked to the Mayor Adorno of Windvale for a little while before I walked around town to see how everyone else was doing. But it was exactly as he'd said. The town was thriving. It made me feel good to know I'd had a positive impact on the villagers' lives, and I was excited to see how much my small territory would grow. Jax, Mahini, Zenda, and I left early the next morning for Argonold Hold, and despite the frigid temperatures, a sizable crowd came out to wave us off. I shouted promises of a return visit over my shoulder, but once the structures were out of sight, I turned my attention back to the road ahead. Our journey had only just begun. It took us a little longer to reach Argonold Hold than it did in the past, but that was mostly due to the colder weather making it harder on the horses. The sight of the dreary gray walls was a welcome relief after so much time spent exposed to the elements, and we all hurried inside the gates to the city.
"It will be good to see the Catman,"
Jax chuckled as we made our way through Argonold.
"I wonder what sort of trouble he's gotten into since becoming court wizard."
Mako Gray, the shape-shifting Catman, was our friend, but we'd only recently met him at the summit of nobility in Valenwood, and Jaxtum's blatant display of affection was surprising. The two had gotten along, sure, but I wouldn't have called them buddies. Jaxtum and Ryandale were the two I pictured having picnics together, but there had been plenty of drunken shenanigans when we'd taken Aiko into the city.
"I'm sure Master Gray has been hard at work cleaning up after Racine. Imagine trying to scrub the smell of werewolf poop off stone before you can use the workshop."
"Werewolves? Pugh!"
Jax spat to the side of the street.
"Bah! It's a waste of magic. What you need to summon... he's a dragon."
"We already talked about this. I don't think it's a good idea."
"What do you think will happen when that egg cracks open, Think it's just gonna keep its trap shut when you tell it to? A dragon's a dragon, right?"
We'll see. I shrugged. "But every summoning spell is a little different."
"Oh, you'll figure it out. I just know it."
Jax chuckled and clicked his tongue to urge his mount on faster.
"Now let's figure out where we can get a hot meal around here."
There'll be food and drink available in the inn. Not too much further. I'd considered staying in the keep with the Duchess and Aiko, but I'd spent enough time in castles for now. Being constantly surrounded by eavesdropping servants, plus all the pomp and circumstances involved in such a political appearance, would just interfere with my visit with the court wizard. Staying in town would make it easier to leave swiftly, too, and I'd get the chance to boost the local economy while I was at it. We found an establishment with a vacancy sign, and candles illuminated the front windows behind lace curtains. The pale blue paint on the exterior was chipped and faded, but the flowers on the porch were brightly colored and well-maintained. I smelled pastries and desserts as soon as we entered the common room, and an instant later a woman wearing a frilly lace apron pranced through the kitchen door. She had graying auburn hair pulled back into a thick braid, but she wore a frown of concentration as she gently placed a steaming pie onto one of the dining tables. I made a new save point as we approached so I could keep my reputation of knowing everyone before we met, and then I cleared my throat. Hello. Are you the owner?
Who?
The woman looked up with a startled gasp, and she pressed the palm of her hand over her breast.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Didn't hear you come in. Yes, I'm the owner, Clarity McCullens.
It's nice to meet you, Mrs. McCullens, I said as I offered my hand for a shake. Thanks for the information. Then I reset to my save point with a wave of my will.
Ding!
Hello, Clarity, I greeted with an air of familiarity, and my companions all exchanged a knowing glance. Ah, it's good to see you're looking well.
How did you know my name? We've never met before, have we? My husband is the god of time,
Mahini explained, with a twinkle of amusement in her ice-blue eyes.
He knows everyone. Oh, the god of time! Oh.
Mrs. McCullen's eyes widened, and she pressed a hand against her bosom.
I never... Oh, please come in. What an honor. What can I do for you?
Well, we'd like to rent two rooms for at least one night, but it's possible we'll be staying longer. It all depends on the weather. I winked.
Oh, doesn't everything these days? Oh, I've plenty of space right now, so you look around upstairs and take your pick of any of the rooms with the doors open.
We made our choices and got settled into our rooms, and the innkeeper provided us with warm baths and hot food. But we put on our nicer clothes after dinner and prepared ourselves for our visit with the nobles. I was excited to see what the castle looked like now, but I would try my best to make my observations subtle. Duchess Jaquetta had taken over after the death of the Duke of Argonauld, and I was curious to see what her leadership was like, but I didn't want to be rude without reason. She hadn't done anything to give me cause for concern, but, well, it was getting harder and harder for me to trust people.
Should we stop for a gift to present to the Duchess? Perhaps some flowers, even?
Oh, that's not a bad idea. I'm sure she'd love a bouquet of flowers.
Think her and Aiko are getting along?
Well, we'll just have to see for ourselves. The blacksmith flashed me a sideways smirk, but he didn't say anything else. This journey was bringing out his ornery side, but I had to admit, it made things interesting. After we acquired our gift for the Duchess, my companions and I made our way up to the castle. The dreary gray stone was dotted with brightly lit windows, and the door opened to flood the courtyard with light as we approached.
Your Grace,
a servant said, as he dipped into a stiff-backed bow.
Welcome to Argonauld Hold. Follow me this way, please.
Thanks, I said. We followed the thin man through the hallways of the keep to a lavishly decorated sitting room. A 10-foot-tall portrait of Duchess Jaquetta sat atop the mantel, and a bust of her likeness graced a pedestal nearby. The curtains were a deep purple that matched the hues of the velvety sofas, and the aroma of sweet-smelling candles filled the air.
Her Grace and Master Grey will be with you shortly,
the servant said with another bow, but then he quickly shut the door behind himself.
So we just wait,
Mahini said, as she glanced around the room in search of potential threats.
It is customary for political meetings to be accompanied by some posturing. Duchess Jaquetta most likely wants to exhibit her power by making us wait on her. It just shows how intimidated she is by Bash. Otherwise, she would realize how pointless it is to attempt to manipulate a god.
Let her have her dramatic entrance. I'm just eager to see Aiko. Almost as if on cue, the catman burst into the room with a broad smile on his face. His tawny tail waved enthusiastically as he clasped my arm in his, but I pulled him in for a hug and squeezed him warmly.
Aiko, my friend, I said with a shit-eating grin on my face when we finally pulled apart. How are you?
I held him out by the shoulders and I scanned him up and down with a scrutinizing eye. The shapeshifter wore a long, split-tailed waistcoat made of a fine brown suede, and the slit in the back gave ample room for his tail. Beneath the overcoat, the catman wore a frilly black shirt and tight leather breeches tucked into suede riding boots.
Sir Bash, it's been too long.
Aiko laughed and clapped me on the shoulder.
We have much to catch up on.
I opened my mouth to question him further, but before I could get another word out, Duchess Jaquetta swooped into the room in a flurry of skirts and perfume. Her light brown hair was pulled back into a complicated weave that flowed down the back of her deep purple dress, and the neckline cut down to her belly button, so her large breasts were pushed into the foreground. The way she rolled her shoulders back and jutted her chest out didn't help either. "Your Grace," I greeted with a just respectful enough dip of my head.
"Oh, Sir Sebastian, what a pleasure to see you again,"
Duchess Jacquetta said as she lowered herself into a flamboyant curtsy so that I could see more of her cleavage.
"Please, have a seat and I'll summon our tea service."
"Have you met my women?" I asked without moving toward the sofas. I had power plays of my own. "This is Mahini of the Kotar Desert and Zenda of the Zaboreal Isles."
"Welcome,"
the Duchess said with a thin-lipped smile.
"I haven't done much traveling, but Eiko has mentioned both of your homelands in his tales. I almost didn't believe they were real. My island is very real,"
Zenda said, and the corners of her lips twitched into a smile.
"And we have all heard of Sorial. Well, we are the wealthiest empire in the world." "Oh!"
the Duchess said with a flippant wave of her hand, and she moved across the room to sit on the sofa opposite the fireplace.
"I wouldn't be surprised if there's anywhere in the world that hasn't heard of our influence."
"Jaxdom here is the best damn blacksmith west of Valenwood,"
Eiko told the Duchess as he gestured to Jax.
"You should see the daggers he made for Bash. Exceptional quality."
"It's good to see you too, Catman," Jax growled as he thumped the shapeshifter on the back, but then he moved to take an armchair across from the Duchess.
The rest of us settled into seats of our own, and then the Duchess rang a little bell. A moment later, a swarm of servants dressed in purple livery trotted into the room, carrying silver platters, and everyone got a cup and saucer, choice of tea, and hot water added to their cups. Zenda reached for the honey and gingerly blew at the steam, but Mahini sipped hers with a stoic expression, despite the near-boiling temperature. Jax's cup was dwarfed by his massive hands, and it was comical how challenging it was for him to lift the delicate cup by the handle to take a careful sip. I stirred my tea absently as I observed the Duchess in my peripheral vision, and the way she shrewdly watched the servant's every move set my nerves on edge. Every employee's body language was tense, and their eyes were full of anxiety when they flicked to their madam. It seemed the Duchess had let power go to her head. It would be something I'd have to nip in the bud before it got out of control, and I didn't want to have to supplant her with someone more manageable. But I wouldn't tolerate power plays in my court. The king may be merciful and kind, but I was less willing to compromise when it came to Sorial. Frederick may be king at the moment, but this was my kingdom now. "So, Eiko, are you settling into your new role as court wizard all right? How have things been since you moved in?" The shapeshifter glanced at the Duchess as though seeking permission to speak, and she dipped her head ever so slightly.
"Things have been good."
Eiko's eyes told a different story.
"Everything is going exactly as expected. The workshop was a mess, but it wasn't anything I couldn't handle."
"We were wondering about the residual smells from the werewolves racing it caged in there. I'm glad you were able to get it cleaned out. What have you been working on in the meantime?"
"That's the best part,"
Eiko said, and this time his excitement seemed genuine.
"I have plenty of room to experiment now, so I've discovered a couple of new tricks with my Razmadan that I'd like to show you."
Excitement bloomed in my chest as I recalled the ghost swords the shapeshifter could summon, and I itched to experiment with his new magic. The Cat Wizard had taught me how to perform the Razmadan spell during the Summit of Nobility in Valenwood, where we met, but he didn't remember me learning it. From his perspective, I'd always known the rare spell he'd spent years mastering. "Sounds great," I grinned. "I'll let you check out my Panabas, too. Yeah, maybe we can alter the Razmadan spell slightly to mimic their shapes. They're incredibly deadly."
"The perfect weapon for the God of Time, then,"
Eiko observed with a pleased smile.
"I'd be happy to swap knowledge once more, my friend. I hope you have enough time in your schedule to stay for a few days. There is still much to catch up on."
"Oh, great one. You are welcome to stay in the keep during the remainder of your visit. I'm sure the accommodations in town are less than appealing."
"No, we found a good inn." Why would there be seedy places in town if everything was all right? Wouldn't that be a sign of something wrong with the city? If it were me, I'd want all my businesses to be prospering and, how'd you put it? Appealing?
Well, I've only been Duchess for a short time.
Duchess Jaquetta waved a dismissive hand.
I'm sure in a few years things will improve.
Oh, it won't take that long. I flashed her a condescending smile. I can fix your city before I leave for the Northern Reaches.
The Northern Reaches?
Eiko raised his eyebrows.
What takes you north?
I hesitated for a moment as my gaze flicked to the Duchess, and I wasn't sure how much I wanted to discuss in front of the noblewoman. She hadn't done anything to mark herself as an enemy, but I didn't trust her completely either.
I've discussed my quest to forge new armor with you before. We've discovered the secret lies in the Northern Reaches.
Oh, you'll have to explain more when we have more time,
Eiko said as he picked up on my hesitancy.
But I've been very rude. Who is this beautiful Zaborian you've brought with you?
Zenda's cheeks flushed a deep purple hue as she cast her eyes to the floor, but a pleased smile toyed with her lips. This is Zenda, the first daughter of High Priest Zadon of the Zaboreal Isles, I said as my chest puffed out in pride. She's joined my family and intends to study Soreal.
Fascinating.
Eiko flashed Zenda a friendly smile.
I've only been to your land once, but they wouldn't let me set foot inside the library. I would love to pick your brain sometime about the history of your people.
Zenda's sapphire eyes lit up with delight.
I would like that.
Zenda is actually a historian of the Zaboreal Isles, so you've asked the perfect person.
Ha ha ha. I had a feeling.
Eiko laughed, but then he turned to the desert goddess sitting on my other side.
And how is Mahimi? Kicking a good ass lately?
On a daily basis.
The desert goddess smiled serenely.
I've been working with Ryandale to train the new recruits in our army. It's a full-time job, but it's also preparing me for my upcoming motherhood role. Oh, congratulations!
Duchess Jaquetta clapped her hands.
Oh, babies are such a blessing! Thank you,
Mahini said as she inclined her head.
Bash's seed is strong, so our child will be a warrior, and I am excited to see what weapon our child will be drawn to.
Duchess Jaquetta turned bright red at Mahini's blunt words, and she fidgeted with her teacup for a moment instead of responding. I resisted the urge to snort in amusement, and instead I segued into more polite conversation. I played the nobility game without embarrassing myself, and then we bade the Duchess and Court Wizard goodnight. I gave Eiko a sideways hug, but then I leaned in to whisper in his ear.
I'll meet you in your workshop first thing in the morning,
I said, in a low voice so only he could hear.
Sounds great, my friend.
Eiko flashed a bright smile at me and my companions.
Time has passed too swiftly. We should complain to the God of Time about it.
I could start the evening over, but you wouldn't remember anything, I said with a shrug.
Oh, your grace, you're so funny! Oh, if only such things were possible!
All things are possible with Bash,
Jaxtum argued with a shake of his head.
Man's got power our heads can't even comprehend.
Truly.
The Duchess glanced from me to Eiko with a quizzically arched eyebrow. I just flashed her a mysterious smile, but Mahini and Zenda looked like they were about to die from holding in their laughter. Eiko wiggled his ears as a mischievous grin stretched across his lips, and he gestured to the door.
Until next time, my friends.
Yes, thank you for gracing us with your presence this evening.
My pleasure. I swooped into a theatrical bow. We returned to the inn and went to sleep, but I couldn't shake the feeling that I needed to fix the situation in Argonold Hold before there was a repeat of the past. First thing in the morning, I headed up to Eiko's workshop by myself, but I made a tour of the town on my way there. There were a few beggars on the streets, and excrement was piled in alleyways. Still, despite the dirty snow that blanketed every surface, the people I passed had smiles on their faces, and I took that as a good sign. Argonauld Hold had been a dreary place full of sour-faced townsfolk the last time I'd been there, but it still had a ways to go before it would be a thriving metropolis like Bastionville or Valinwood. There were no guards at the entrance to the wizard's workshop, and I climbed down the plethora of steps to the landing with eager steps. The door at the bottom was hanging ajar, so I knocked on the surface as I let myself in. Aiko, that is, back to me at the workbench, and I closed the door loudly as I entered the room. Aiko spun around and flashed me a broad grin.
Oh, it's about time, Sir Bash.
The god of time is never late. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to. Ha! Not even Gandalf could hold a torch to me.
Indeed.
Aiko's tail flicked from side to side.
I'm glad you came. The Duchess is watchful.
Tell me the truth. What's it like working for her?
Oh, I was in love at first. I doted on her every whim.
That's what it seemed like when we parted ways in Valinwood. What changed?
She did. Aiko shook his head sadly. She became more vapid with each passing day, until I could barely tolerate being in her presence.
Oh, maybe she just needs to get laid. I shrugged. Are you up for the challenge?
Ha 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 ha.
Aiko laughed and shook his head, but then he turned back to the workbench and gestured for me to follow him. He had a variety of jars and implements spread across the surface, and he picked up a simplistic iron dagger. He held it up and moved it around as though to show how ordinary and plain it was, but then he flashed me a wink and waved his hand over the weapon. When his hand fell away, a ghost dagger had replaced the iron blade, and I lifted my eyebrows in surprise.
You can make anything into a Razmadon?
I shook my head in awe.
But why would you need to?
I have a theory,
Aiko said, with a twinkle in his honey-colored eyes.
I'm working my way up to experimenting with my own flesh.
You want to turn into smoke.
Exactly. Aiko nodded. Dematerialize myself to let blows slide right through me, only to rematerialize on the other side with my blade in my enemy's heart.
It could make you completely invulnerable, invincible.
Nothing is for certain,
Aiko said, and he flapped his hand dismissively.
I have a lot of research to conduct before I can move my experiments forward to the next stage.
Well, Zenda would be a good person to work with on something like this. Maybe you could come stay in Bastionville for a while.
I would like that. Aiko
grinned.
Someplace slightly warmer would be nice for a change.
Well, then there's probably no point in asking you to come with us to the northern reaches.
Ha ha ha! I'm afraid not.
Aiko laughed, but then his eyes sparked with thought.
By the way, what exactly are you going to the northern reaches for? Is there something required for your dragon armor?
Yeah, exactly. We have to take all the materials to a volcano to forge it in the magma.
You must be searching for Mount Paquet. It's the only volcano I know of near Soreal.
Yes, I said. And I didn't mention how I had even less information than that before beginning this quest.
You've come a long way for nothing, then, my friend.
Aiko gave me a sad look.
Mount Paquet has been dormant for many years.
I inhaled sharply at the news, and I made a save point with a wave of my will before I peppered the shapeshifter with questions. Dormant? I frowned.
I can't be. Unless...
Aiko tapped a finger against his chin, but then he turned to his bookshelf and began to rifle through the volumes.
Unless you can find the right combination of spells to, you know, wake it up.
Is this something someone has tried before? I asked, and I peered over his shoulder at the pages as he flipped them too rapidly for me to see.
I heard a story about it. An old wizard's warning about combining elements.
Oh, shit. That sounds ominous.
Waking up a dormant volcano isn't for the faint of heart.
Echo flashed me a wink.
But I see no such folk.
Finally, he landed on the page he was searching for, and he pointed to a line of text on the second page.
Opposites mix. Fire and water do not mix. Couples merge. Earth and air create the verge. Scaled and even, all is well. Mix three or more, and awaken fiery hell.
Eiko read out the words in an ominous tone, but then he turned to me and brightened.
I think it means if you perform spells from three or more elements at once, then it will crack open the earth itself to let the internal fire flow free.
Damn! I raised my eyebrows. Well, sounds simple enough.
For a god, maybe.
Eiko smirked and closed the book with a sharp snap before placing it back on the shelf.
I've never known anyone else who could master all the elemental spells.
Yeah, it took me a few lifetimes.
Well, I wish you luck on your journey, my friend. Make sure you bundle up. The northern winter has only just begun.
Thanks for all your help, Eiko, I said as I clapped him on the shoulder. Until next time we meet. I reset to my save point with a thought, and Eiko's words accompanied the chime as it rang in my ears.
Oh, you've come a long way for nothing, then, my friend.
Eiko gave me a sad look.
Mount Paquet has been dormant for many years.
That's where you're wrong. There's an old wizard's warning advising against using multiple elemental spells at once, but I think it's exactly what I'll need to wake up the dormant volcano.
Oh, I've heard something of that sort somewhere.
Eiko turned to his bookshelf and tapped a thoughtful finger against his chin. I crossed the room and pulled out the book he'd grabbed during the previous run-through, and I turned it directly to the page he'd shown me before. Eiko's eyes widened as he scanned over the words, and he shook his head in awe.
Oh, you'll never cease to amaze me, my friend.
Eiko clapped me on the shoulder.
And here I was worried you might need my help.
You've helped me more than you know, as per usual. We both laughed and said our goodbyes, but I was feeling much more confident about my mission when I arrived back at the inn. I was the only one in the world I knew of who could perform spells from multiple elements, so if anyone could wake up the volcano, it was me. My companions and I met with the Duchess one more time before we left, and I took a harsher tone with her than I had during our tea time. I lead by example, and I expect no less from you, I said, with my hands planted firmly on my hips. The people of Argonoldhold are looking to you to be an example of behavior. Every single servant is your responsibility, and you owe it to every last citizen to give them a life they can be proud of. It starts with you and how you treat your employees. Go out in the city, talk to the people, see what they need to be happy. Then make it fucking happen. The Duchess cowered before me, but she nodded along, as though she understood, so I relented the harshness of my tone slightly. I'm going to be stopping back by here on my way home, and if I don't see any signs of improvement in the way you treat your people or in the living conditions of the entire town, then I will take my recommendations for a replacement straight to the king.
Oh, you wouldn't!
Try me, I frowned.
I will do better, Your Grace.
The Duchess said as she attempted to curtsy while still sitting in her chair.
You will see changes upon your return, I swear.
Good. I nodded. I look forward to it. We left around noon to give the sun plenty of time to emerge from behind the gray snow clouds hugging the entire town, but then we took the northern route headed away from Argonoldhold. We were officially in uncharted territory, and excitement thrummed through my veins. I made a new save point with the walls of Argonoldhold still visible behind us, and I turned my attention to the road ahead. I was grateful for my thick, fur-lined cloak as the wind began to blow snow at our faces, and we all had to huddle over the horses' necks to withstand the blasts, so conversation was sparse. The wind relented after a few hours, though, and we were able to pick up our pace slightly.
The roads headed north weren't cleared of snow, so the horses' hooves crunched through the buildup. We'd wrapped their ankles in protective coverings, but I was glad we didn't have to walk through it on foot. My boots would be soaked within moments, and then I'd likely get frostbite on my toes. The sun began to set way earlier than I expected, and once the shadows of twilight lengthened, the snowfall started up once more. We held our cloaks tightly around our faces and trusted the horses to keep to the path, but it was slow going. I started looking for somewhere to make camp, but the swirling storm all around me quickly made it difficult to see further than a few feet ahead.
We have to stop soon, Bash!
Mahini shouted through the driving snow.
The horses need a break!
All right, let's find some place with some tree cover, I called back. They took us a little while longer to find a suitable place to camp off the road, and we divided up the tasks among us to make everything go faster. Jax hobbled and blanketed the horses and mules, while Zenda and Mahini attempted to start a fire, and I worked on our shelter. Our tent was a heavier and thicker version of ones I'd used before, and it was large enough to shelter all four of us for the night. I could still feel the wind coming through the fabric like icy daggers, though, so I created a wall of ice all around the temporary dwelling. The frozen wall wouldn't melt with it being so cold, and it would act as a windbreak for the worst of the breeze. When I finished with the shelter, I went to check on the progress of the fire, but the girls were struggling to get the wood to light. Their flames kept sputtering out, and their shoulders slumped in defeat. "Oh, it's all right," I said as I came up behind them. "I got this." I aimed the palms of my hands at the tinder, and I murmured the word of power for the fire spell. Balls of flame burst from my hands to coat the wood, and an instant later a fire was roaring to life before us.
Thanks, Bash.
Mahini dusted the snow from her pants as she stood up.
Let's get something to eat and get inside before the storm gets worse.
We might as well get used to camping in conditions like this. It's not likely to be much better in the northern reaches.
Oh, I already miss the warmth of Argonaut Keep. Jax grumbled as he stomped his feet and rubbed his arms.
You'd love the Kotar Desert.
I'd like to go there myself someday.
I'm not sure I'd receive a warm welcome.
Well, it's hard for people to be assholes when you show up with a god.
I would like to see the entire world. The snow is so beautiful, but I can only imagine the desert would be breathtaking in its own ways. It's just as dangerous and just as beautiful.
We cooked a quick meal, but we took our dishes into the tent to sit cross-legged on the floor in a small circle. We continued to share stories about our homelands as the light continued to fade, and after a while the girls began to yawn. I dozed off as the sound of the snow whirled around us, but then I heard something unfamiliar, and my nerves flared. The unmistakable sound of a footstep crunching in the snow echoed just outside the tent, and I had blades in my hands a moment later. Then I peeked out between the flaps and scanned over our campsite to see 10 cloaked and hooded figures with wicked curved daggers in their hands. The blades were curved and jagged-edged, and a crimson line ran down the center of the steel. The handles were made from what looked like giant teeth, and it reminded me of something I'd seen in video games. The daggers flashed in the dying light of the remains of our fire, and a shudder ran up my spine.
We were under attack,